This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. More than 50 people in Brooklyn were sent to the hospital after overdosing on synthetic marijuana last month, and the problem has now hit closer to home. A Durham County resident experienced extreme bleeding after exposure to what is believed to be fake weed. Also called K2 or Spice, comes in colorful, playful wrappers and, for a while, available behind the counter at many local convenience stores. It is definitely synthetic, but is it marijuana? Jenny Wiley is a senior fellow in behavioral pharmacology at the nonprofit research institute RTI International here in North Carolina, and she spent more than two decades studying cannabinoids. She joins us now. Jenny Wiley, welcome to State of Things.
Thank you, Frank.
Good to have you here. What is synthetic marijuana?
Synthetic marijuana or synthetic cannabinoids are research chemicals that were originally designed to help us answer questions about how the brain is activated. And in fact, as some of the early synthetic cannabinoids were instrumental in helping us to discover that the brain has an endocannabinoid system. They are also
that means we're kind of THC ready. We're pot ready. Born that way.
Right.
Okay. So there's the little receptors that take it on. Well, that's which might be intuitive. It's like, well, how does this stuff work? Something in the brain must have to receive it and then process it.
Right. Exactly.
But we learn the mechanism. Once we learn the mechanism, then you think, okay, well, then we should be able to recreate this in the lab, right?
Right. Right. And then these research chemicals, which some of which were developed to look at whether we could separate out the therapeutic effects of THC or marijuana and the psychoactive effects and, you know, go toward the therapeutic. Turns out that we could not figure out how to do that. But in the meantime, we learned a whole lot about the system underlying, you know, what activates THC.
So now this research has been done. We're pulling it apart. We're finding out and getting down to the DNA, the fine points of this stuff. And then the research essentially abandoned because you can't get to the final answer, which is, can we find the therapeutic effect without the psychoactive? And that's put on the shelf. And then along comes the internet.
Yes, along comes the internet. And what we see there is two things. One is that people see a way to make money and essentially take some of these research chemicals, because now the scientific literature is available that allows them to know what these compounds are from the patent literature and from the science literature, make them and then sell them via the internet or via convenience stores.
All right, well, let's talk more then about what it looks like and how you use it. You're talking about chemical compounds, so what happens to these and kind of what form does it take?
Okay, essentially what happens is the manufacturers make the chemical. It's usually kind of an oily substance, and they spray it onto plant material. We don't believe the plant material has any psychoactive effects by itself, but once they spray it on there, sometimes using just spray bottles that you might find in a garage or something like that. And if you've ever done spray painting or spray bottle with anything, then you know that it doesn't evenly get along the whole plant. And so then the plant material is rolled into joints and they're smoked. The other thing, or they're put into packets that then people can roll into joints when they buy the packets. The other way that the cannabinoids are used is that there have been e-liquids, and so they're vaped in much the same way as e-cigarettes. You can have the same problem because there can be crystallization that causes more of the compound in one part of the liquid than the other.
Relatively cheap to make?
Probably, yes.
Yeah. Do we know where it's being made? I'm assuming this could be made anywhere, right?
We don't know. We think that some of the original impetus was in China, only because some of the raw materials are more available there. But we really don't know. And in fact, some of the early compounds were synthesized by undergraduates in John Huffman's lab.
All right. So
at Clemson.
At Clemson. So, well, I mean, are there any dangers? I'm looking at these. We're talking about the fact that this stuff is out there, and apparently it does have some dangers, but I don't know how many people are using this, 50 in Brooklyn and one in Durham County. One could look at that and say, that's not very dangerous, depending on how many people are using it.
Well, I think one of the dangers is that we don't know who's using it. For example, there are times when people might go out and buy synthetic cannabinoids. There are other times where people might buy something else, even marijuana, and it might be spiked with synthetic cannabinoids. I mean, we're seeing the same thing happen with fentanyl and the opioids in that, you know, it's the knowing person that takes it, and then there's the person who doesn't know what they're taking and ends up taking it.
Anything about the intensity or the dose of synthetic marijuana compared to naturally grown weed?
Okay, all of these compounds that are out there are a lot more potent. That is, if you take just a little bit, it's going to have a lot bigger punch than marijuana, even high potency marijuana.
Now, technically, again, you've sort of changed the profile of this, right? The chemical profile. So that means that to be technically illegal, somebody's got to catch up with that, right?
Right.
And has that happened yet?
Well, what has been happening is that some of the earlier compounds that were found in these synthetics are no longer available because, yes, the DEA has caught up with it. You know, they've made it illegal. So they go on to other compounds that cannot be detected. And that's been the problem with this whole strategy is kind of whack-a-mole. You know, take what's there. At RTI International, we do some of the tests for the DEA to determine whether something is like these chemicals so that it can be, you know, science-based illegal.
Right.
And, you know, then they come up with
it's
a
kind
new
of an arms
compound.
Like designer drugs.
Yeah. Right, it is. It is designer drugs, exactly.
How about for the user? Because one of the things I suppose you might think about is whether you can evade a drug test if you're in a situation where you have to be tested. Would a person using synthetic marijuana test positive for marijuana?
No, they would not. No, the compound is chemically very different, and that's one of the reasons that people may use it, because they would not test positive. Usually a drug test will look for specific metabolites of, say, for example, THC. Well, if you don't know what the drug is, you can't look for its metabolites.
Now, for a while, this stuff was really readily available. They talked about, you know, convenience stores having it and selling it in the open, right?
Right, and I have actually a personal story in that regard, in that when we moved to Cary a number of years ago, we stopped at this store to get a cold drink after moving all day in August, and walked in, and there was a whole array of different synthetic cannabinoids that were available, and you know, it was something that we had thought, okay, we'll take our grandchildren in the store, and, you know, had second thoughts about that. And at the time, I purchased some of those products, and we took them back to the lab, and every single one of them tested positive for synthetic compounds.
Now, is that legal anymore? Would they be able to do this anymore or still?
It probably was not legal at that time. And in fact, I think they've cracked down on that. You probably would not be able to see them, at least out, you know, behind the counter with the cigarettes. But they're still readily available on the internet and in some convenience stores or shops where, you know, they might be behind the counter.
Now, we've talked about these hospitalizations and this case in Durham. So what can happen? What can go wrong?
Well, I think the case in Durham and the cases in Illinois where people were bleeding, I think, is a case where the synthetic cannabinoid product was contaminated with rat poison. That's one of the dangers, is there's no quality control. So there could be pesticides, there could be rat poison, there could be any number of things that could get into. If the product is not contaminated, though, one of the things to keep in mind is that these products are not tested on animals or humans, you're essentially serving as a human guinea pig. So it'd be kind of like if, it's hot out today, so I want a drink of water. I'm thirsty. So if I take a bottle of, water and drink it, I'm probably going to be fine. I'm not thirsty anymore. I could take a cup and dip it into Jordan Lake and drink something. That would be kind of akin to maybe THC, it might hurt me, it might not, whatever. This would be like taking a glass and into the Durham sewer system and putting it in there and drinking the water. It might slake your thirst, but there's a lot of risk involved in doing it because you don't know what's in there and what effects it may have.
I've only got about 30 seconds left, but some of these risks, when you talk about the risk, that always becomes an argument for legalization of these kinds of substances. Then we could regulate it, then we could test it, then you'd be accountable. Is that what we should do with this?
I don't think so. The issue for me is very separate from marijuana. These chemicals should remain, not legal. I think one of the dangers of calling them synthetic marijuana is that people don't think of marijuana as something dangerous, and these really can be. These are the rejects from the drug discovery programs, the compounds that we set aside because they were too dangerous.
Thank you very much. Jenny Wiley, Senior Fellow in Behavioral Pharmacology at the Nonprofit Research Institute, RTI International. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
You can find links to her work at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, an epic treasure hunt that has attracted tens of thousands of searchers. We'll talk about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay with us.